You are listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Randall White in today for Beth Ruyek. Mark Arax is a native of Fresno and a former LA Times journalist. His books include The King of California, In My Father's Name, and West of the West. California's water has been a contentious topic since the gold rush. Today, Insight previews an upcoming episode of the Cap Radio Reads podcast featuring Arax in conversation with Donna Appadoni about his new book, The Dreamt Land, Chasing Water and Dust Across California.
My grandparents, after we sold the last ranch along the San Joaquin River, they moved to a suburb in Fresno called Fig Garden. And three houses down was this huge irrigation canal. And my grandmother made me promise that I would never go near it.
Why?
She said, do not go near it. It's got a magical power to it. It will lure you up and into the waters, and you will drown. And she said, and no one will come to save your body. And don't get the wrong idea about my grandmother, but I said, why not, Grandma? She said, because the flow of one irrigation canal is much more important to the valley than the body of one silly boy. And in a way, that was true. I mean, there were times when particularly Mexican kids they would swim there, they would drown, and their bodies wouldn't be recovered for months. Because to recover would mean to shut down that flow. So I had a sense that something was strange, but I never bothered to ask, you know, where that water was coming from, where it was going, and to whom and by what right. That's when I had a sense.
The title is fascinating, and it comes from a true dream that someone in the book has, but just the title, The Dreamt Land, because when I hear that word, dream, dreamt, I think there's possibility, there is some fiction involved, there's some imagination involved, and there's some idealistic thinking involved in that too. And that's all true in this case.
It is. The title actually comes from a poem by Richard Wilbur, who was a fantastic poet in the 50s and 60s. And while I was writing the book, he died, and I read his obituary in the New York Times, and I went back and looked at some of his poems. I was trying to find a title. I mean, he's off in Italy describing some statue there, and he talks about the hand going to where the water is and the eye going to where the sun is, and it's the dreamt land. And I thought, that's perfect. And then there was the story that you talked about in the book where one of the early pioneers, when he was in Germany, actually dreamed the valley as a kid.
Before he knew he'd be here.
Right.
Fascinating. We want to talk a little bit about water politics, how it works, and then a lot about history, because a big section of the book is about the history of California as it pertains to water, but just a lot of other aspects of history too. So we start with snowmelt, and we have streams and rivers that come into the valley, and we have an aquifer. Which part of that is most related to the politics of water?
Well, let's start with the proposition that the men who took this land from the natives, we had the largest indigenous, the concentration of indigenous of any place in America, North America, 300,000 natives. And they were wiped out by three kinds of invasions. First, the Spanish invasion, and then Mexico for a time, and then Sutter coming in. And I do a whole chapter on Sutter. When the Americans take over, they decide that they're going to declare the entire edge of this continent, 1,000 miles long, as one state. And that right there was a bit of hubris, but it also put a challenge in front of them. How do you make the parts of that state equal when there are actually 8 different states of nature within? And that's where the proposition came that we need to move the rain. And it started with the gold rush. The mining of gold was really the mining of water first.
Subsidence is a big part of what you write about. The sinking of the land, which we don't think about, and it might be more evident in parts of the state than it is in others, but there are parts of the state where the land has sunk a lot.
No, the aqueduct itself, they pumped so much water out in this last drought that the aqueduct, there are 4 or 5 pools of it, that have sunk so much that the gravity flow is no longer working. And we're all spending hundreds of millions of dollars in electricity to try to get that water, pump it through its dead spots. And right now along the Fryant-Kern Canal, which is, the aqueduct is on the west side, the Fryant-Kern Canal is on the east side, part of that has sunk so much, it's not serving, going all the way to Bakersfield the way the water used to. And there's some bills right now in the legislature to spend, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to fix that problem. It's interesting that there's going to be no contribution from the irrigation districts or the farmers who did the pumping.
There are canals all over the country. There are dams all over the country.
When you're saying country, you mean the country.
I mean like the U.S.
Oh, you mean the U.S. Okay.
I don't mean rural areas, that kind of country. I mean, and all over every country, dams and canals are a part of how we get water from one place to another. What makes the Central Valley different and what makes it not the best situation?
It's not to the extent that it is in the valley. We altered the landscape. There's geological studies that show this. We alter the landscape in the San Joaquin Valley more than any place on Earth. And we did it through scrapers. We did it through land levelers. So it's a dramatic alteration of the land. And then we took these rivers and we made them run backward.
Why are the dams and canals, and how are they different here? Why did California take it to this extent and other places didn't?
Well, I think it was that prop. It's the ambition of the place. You know, we started off in the gold rush, we started off in a supercharged way. It was like a hurdle forward. And you wonder, we all know about manifest destiny and how America moved east to west. And you wonder if manifest destiny would have eventually had its way with California and changed it. But we never gave manifest destiny really a chance. The gold rush was manifest destiny on steroids. And really, they erected the first hydraulic systems in those mountains. First, it was flumes, which are essentially wooden ditches strung from canyon to canyon. And then they figured out that, you know, that we can the erosive force of that water could be much more powerful if we put it in a canvas hose and stick on the end of it a nozzle. And that thus was born hydraulic engineering, the hydraulics of water. At some point in the 1880s, the silt coming down those rivers from gold mining was destroying farmland that was in Marysville, the Butte Bottoms, all these places. And so California had a choice in the 1880s. Was our future going to be farming or gold? And it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and it was decided that they can't do that anymore. And so the mining of gold then became the mining of the soil. And those systems that were built up in the mountain were transported down on the valley floor.
When people in other states look at California and they look at some of our environmental laws and practices, when it comes to pollution of the air, for example, and how we handle that, people from other states look at us and say, wow, you know, they really take it to the extreme there, but you know, if you think about it, it's pretty good. They're doing some really good things, and maybe we're not going to follow or copy California, but you know, we tip our hats. We see that California's in a good direction for them. When it comes to water, I don't know what people are saying in other states, but it doesn't seem like we're being very progressive.
No, we're one of the last states to regulate groundwater, the pumping of it. It took us 165 years. There's a character in this book about midway through. His name is Harding, Sidney Harding. He's a professor at UC Berkeley. And to make a little extra money, he goes to work for the state in summer during the summers, and he works for farmers and consults. And he starts putt-putting in his little Model T Ford down the valley in the 1920s, and he discovers the seeds of a disaster. The farmers have just taken this new turbine pump, and they're going deeper and deeper into the earth to bring out water because they've already used up the flow of the rivers, and now they need the flow of the aquifer to grow farmland even more. And he's warning, he's like a Cassandra, he's warning that this is going to be a real problem. You can't chase that water all the way to hell. But they ignore him. And it's not until 100 years later that we see the wisdom. So yeah, when people say California is very progressive and we're on the cutting edge of environmental stuff, that did not apply itself to groundwater.
Mark Arax, thanks for coming.
Yeah,
tonight.
Thank you. I just felt...
The Drenth Land.
That's author and journalist Mark Arax. His new book is The Drenth Land, Chasing Water and Dust Across America, speaking with Cap Radio's Morning Edition host, Donna Appadoni. You can see Mark Arax at an author reading tomorrow, June 4th. It's from 5 to 6 in the evening at the California State Library in Sacramento. The event details are right there on our website at capradio.org. Also, we'll have continuing coverage of the California Democratic Party Convention all week here on Insight. Tomorrow, you will hear a panel of undecided delegates talk about the 2020 Democratic primary contenders in the race for president. And then on Wednesday, we'll hear from PolitiFact reporter Chris Nichols, which is always a favorite. And also tomorrow, we will have our great question winner. If you haven't checked out our great question yet, it's when we hear from you and you tell us the questions you want answered by the Cap Radio staff. And tomorrow, what happened to the land owned by Japanese residents of Sacramento after World War II? It is sure to be an excellent conversation. That's Insight for today. I'm Randall White. Insight is produced by Kate Gonzalez and Cody Drabble. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Casey Gardner, and Emily Zentner. Our technical director is Mr. Mark Jones. And today's engineer is Antonio Muniz. Our senior producer is Helen Barrington. Insight's executive producer is Joe Barr. We'll be back with another live show tomorrow. Thank you for joining us.